Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
Hey, I'm here today on a Friday. We have these special Friday editions where we interview all kinds of wonderful, exciting, incredible people. Just like J.J. Washington. Hey, J.J., we're glad to have you with us, man.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
J.J., you are the director, vice president, director of personal evangelism, whatever. What are you here at the North American Mission Board?
The official title is director of personal evangelism.
All right. Yeah. Where are you from originally?
Originally from Clearwater, Florida.
Clearwater. Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, J.J., we are here at the Replant Summit, and man, the Lord really, really anointed you yesterday, and you brought an amazing message that was so encouraging to so many people about your story at Austell. That's really what I want to focus in on.
Okay.
Because we're talking to a bunch of guys out there who are trying to replant churches and revitalize churches. And man, you've done that. First of all, JJ and I go back. I was looking on my phone a while ago. The first contact I think you and I had together was 2016.
Yeah.
We were traveling together doing some things, and you were a mentee, and I was an intern. I think we were just kids back then, and so we've had a good relationship ever since, and really have enjoyed one another. And JJ's had a huge experience in life. You played football?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that, real quick.
So, grew up here in Atlanta. Was born in Florida, but raised here in Atlanta. Played high school football here. Went to NC State and played collegiate football.
Yep.
And got saved there.
Yep. That's
so
awesome.
That's where the Lord stepped into my life, and felt called to ministry. And came back here to Georgia. So most of my ministry has been here in Georgia since then.
But your ministry took a really... We would travel around in 2016, 17, doing some revitalization conferences. And you were there really just to do some of the logistics.
That's exactly right.
In other words, you carried the books, set up the tables, those kinds of things.
Yep.
And you heard me talk about replanting.
You scared me to death, too.
Talk a little bit about that. Because I would get up there passionately talking about how we need to replant churches. Dying churches are great. They're exciting.
Yes.
And you would sit in the back and think, what?
Yeah, not me. I was doing all my setup stuff and sit there and you would teach on it, and I didn't know much about revitalization or replant until God intersected our lives. And so I just thought I would be there mentoring that church, and I would just go take a church that's probably healthy and just keep it going, right? Not wreck it. And but obviously God had different plans. But yeah, I was trying to dodge it, definitely.
He had very different plans.
Yes, he did.
So you went to Austell.
Yes.
Now Austell is used to be a suburb of Atlanta.
Yes.
I mean, we call that the inner suburban ring.
Right.
It used to be a suburb of Atlanta, but Atlanta, as everyone knows, has just exploded in growth.
Yes.
So what used to be suburbs became really inner suburbs.
Yes, exactly. Right.
Right?
Yes.
So what year did you go to Austell?
So that was in 2017, towards the end of 2017.
All right.
Yes.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, talk to me about what was like when you got there.
Well, the church obviously was struggling. There was a remnant there, mainly senior adults. So no youth, no children, no young families. The youngest couple was in their early 60s. So my family of four, when we showed up, it was much different than where we had just come from, which was a larger church, lots of kids, lots of youth. So it was a culture shock, to say the least.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the situation. And the community, however, had completely flipped. As you know, as Atlanta's grown, that community had diversified, but the church had not. The schools had diversified, businesses had diversified, but the church was behind.
You shared something interesting with me. So much of revitalization, replanting has to do with the flip in the community, as the community has changed. And, really... You mentioned, talk a bit about how that happened in Atlanta and really kind of connected even to the Olympics.
Yeah, so back in 96 when the Olympics came here, leading up to that, they were trying to get the city nice and clean and beautiful for all the folks that would be coming in. So they tore down a lot of the housing projects that were in the city. And so a lot of those people that were living in the city, like myself, ended up spreading out into these inner suburban areas that we're talking about. And so so we followed the rail line. MARTA is our transportation here. So it goes east out in the Stone Mountain, west out in Austell, south towards the airport, and north towards, Alpharetta area. And so people just kind of spread out. And so those communities changed, and they looked completely different than what they did, historically.
And a lot of churches see that as it is a challenge, but they see it as a negative.
Yeah.
And reality is, I love what our friend Sam Rayner says that your church's address is no accident. Mm. And so it's the Lord who changes those neighborhoods.
Exactly.
He brings those folks there,
right.
and he divinely has appointed that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's up to the church to be the missionary church,
right,
in that neighborhood with all new people there.
Exactly.
And so when you showed up, they hadn't quite made that transition yet.
No, they hadn't. And there was some that didn't want to, and there was some that wanted to but didn't know how to.
That is a real important point.
You know, and so so the ones that were not necessarily interested, they quickly made that known and kind of transitioned to other churches that where they could continue what they were used to.
So basically, these are older white people.
Yes.
Who their neighborhood that they knew was no longer there.
Yeah, it was completely different. Yeah.
And mm-hmm. and the neighborhood in Estelle, when you got there, was what were the percentages?
So it was about 55% African American, and then Hispanic was passing Anglo.
Oh, really?
And so yeah, so it was growing in that direction, and so obviously our church, I tease people, I say, when we showed up, that we had pretty much, 4% now African American, because my family of four shows up. So it's a little bit of progress on day one in terms of reflecting the community. But anyway, those who were brought into that, and there was a lot of people that were, we just ran with them and we just got busy.
All right.
And they were just looking for some leadership on how to do that.
Okay.
So yeah.
Talk to me about the building. What was it like when you got there?
The building needed a lot of work. I mean, they didn't see it because they were there every day. So, you get kind of accustomed to that.
That is so true. You and I, we can walk into a building and do a consult, and we go, my goodness, this place looks awful.
Yes.
But it has happened so slowly over time that they don't even see
it. They don't really had a smell. It hadn't been power pressure washed in years. I mean, I was embarrassed that, when we, to have guests. Because, right. Because we were kind of trying to fix up the building as we were trying to, reach the community. So some right. folks would come in and they wouldn't stick, know what I mean? But some were like, they saw the progress, so they kind of stuck and hung with us. But it was a little embarrassing at first, I'll be honest with you, because there was an obvious smell and stuff like that. Carpet needed being changed, pressure washing, the parking lot didn't have any stripes any longer, cracks. I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on, man.
And really, JJ, those of us who've done this work, we've been there where you walk in and you just overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Everything
yeah.
you look at needs to be changed.
Yeah.
And then that doesn't even begin to talk about the people who are remaining. They need to be changed.
Right.
And then we got to reach these new people.
Right.
And you have to deal with your family and all the transition.
Yes, big one. That's
big. Got to spend time with them.
That's a big one.
I mean, you got any insight to that?
Well, I tell you this, for my kids, because mm-hmm. when we showed up, there were no kids, so they were the only ones, right? And so it was hard for them in the beginning. They often come to me and say, you sure we don't need to go back to the other church? So I really had to stay close to them and shepherd them and encourage them and say, look, God's going to, we're going to reach people. Kids are going to come. Family's going to come. Just give them that vision of what God was going to do. And he did over time. Mm-hmm. So they were excited to be able to see it, because I didn't realize at the time until much later on, like, man, my kids just got an opportunity to get a front row seat to how God can move as well and just see right. his power, because they right. saw what it was and saw what it became. And so that was, I didn't catch that in the beginning, like what God was just showing them, they've read about him in the Bible, but they were to see his power, so that was cool. Then also just protecting my wife, because there were expectations that they would get a 2-for-1 type of deal. So just trying to protect her and show, okay, here's what she'll do, and she's going to find her lane here. And she's more of a, plug and play, like wherever you need me in the nursery today, mm-hmm. you need me in the children's room today. So she'll just kind of get in where she can fit in. But then also just the people. I mean, when I came in, I just wanted to respect the history that was there.
Okay.
And really just say, look, guys, somebody, a group of people came here to plant this church to reach this community. And let's keep that legacy going. You know what I mean? And so I just tried to inspire them in that way. And one thing I know, when you walk in the door in a replant, revive situation, the people that are there, a lot of them are demoralized. They've lost a sense of hope because they haven't seen God move in forever. No right. one comes to the aisle, no baptisms, nothing. And so you got to spend a lot of time trying to inspire and motivate and just preaching the word and just encouraging them and helping them see that God can do it again. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so we spent a lot of time doing that on the front end. And then God began to move and got some early wins, and they bought in.
Okay.
They bought in.
That's
and
awesome.
So, yeah.
So it became really a racially mixed church, obviously.
It did reflect the community, because one of the things that I told them, I said, like, here are the demographics. Here's what your community looks like today.
Right.
And so if we're obedient to go and reach our Jerusalem, God's going to save some. And over time, we're going to look on the inside like it looks on the outside, because these are the people who make up our community right outside of our doors.
Right.
And that's exactly what God did. Yeah. And so so just preparing them for what that new day was going to look like.
Right. So is the guy listening and his wife right now, and mm-hmm. they're in a situation where they've got to be in a replant situation. The building's is in disrepair. Mm-hmm. The neighborhood and the church don't really jive up, and the older people don't want to make changes. Give me a couple of three things you're going to tell that guy who's listening right now.
The main thing I would say is really focus on preaching the word. I mean, preaching the word, as you talked about a little bit yesterday about big things like mm-hmm. the importance of discipleship and mm-hmm. missions and, mm-hmm. and evangelism, just that vision and just getting that out there. Because a lot of times what I've discovered is that some of them there wasn't much biblical literacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so you're trying to help them see, okay, this is in the scriptures and this is what we're called to do.
Right.
And over time, God will begin to move on their hearts and bring personal revival and those type of things. So that's one piece of it.
Awesome.
And then I would say the second thing is to be that example. Like, let them see you when y'all are praying. You're praying for the lost. You're praying for the community. You're praying, you know, calling out these streets by name. You're sharing the gospel yourself. You're discipling folks. You're leading by your example. You know what I mean? That's so, so important that they're able to see that. And here's another thing I would say, the third thing, you got to be willing to do whatever it takes.
I love that.
I'm telling you, man, listen, if you got to be the youth guy,
yep.
the children's guy,
yep.
the pastor, the administrator, the
yep.
janitor,
yep.
then you just got to do it.
Yep.
Me and my wife, she used to come in and do some admin stuff for us part-time to help me out. And she would tease me sometimes. She'd say, you know, there's something on the floor down in the fellowship hall. I say, just call maintenance. But I was him. You know, we just tease like that, you know. And but you got to be willing to do whatever it takes. And here's a couple things. I remember one time, we didn't have a youth pastor.
Yeah.
And we started seeing youth come to the church. And some came by themselves, some came with their families. And so I was like, I got to find a way to keep these kids engaged.
Right.
And so on Sundays, I would preach. I would tell my wife to run out of Little Caesars, get some $5 pizzas. I would go in my office, change into street clothes,
uh-huh.
come down to fellowship, eat pizza with them. And then we'd hop on the bus, go to skating rink, go to the bowling alley, you know, whatever. I mean, whatever it takes,
right.
you know what I mean? And so you just got to be willing to do that
right,
in those
so
situations.
That, you know, you're talking to a guy who's done that.
Yeah.
And you're probably like me. When you were doing it, it was just, you just got up every day and did what you had to do, right? And you just kind of overwhelmed by it, but
yeah.
you just sort of take it one hour at a time, one
yeah.
day at a time. Now, you and I both are in different places.
Mm-hmm.
You are the director of personal evangelism at the North American Mission Board. I'm the director of replanting and revitalization. I look back on those times as wonderful times.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I do,
reflect
too.
On that a little bit.
Yeah. Listen, when I was pulling those pictures for you guys to see yesterday, like it took me down memory lane.
Yeah, we showed pictures of when he first went to Estelle, and then the baptisms and everybody was there. Go ahead,
right.
So that.
it just takes you down memory lane, and you just kind of like, man, that was such a sweet time.
I know, but it didn't seem like it at the time.
Not when you're in it. Like I said, it is a crucible.
It is,
and you're learning. And like I said, I didn't realize this, Mark, going in, and like, okay, we're going here to do a work, but God was going to do a work in us,
yes.
as well. So
yes.
you don't realize that, and so you're growing. And you learn how to depend on the Lord, because you realize real quickly your preaching, your strategic skills, none of that is going to get it done. Only
right.
God.
That's right.
Like, you have to really depend on
him. That's right.
That's right. My goodness.
Yeah.
So it really brought a healthy dependence on the Lord like never before
yeah.
in my
you
life.
Know, a couple of years ago, I was doing a conference at Southern, a doctrinal seminar or something. And same thing, I had a video of Warnell,
mm-hmm.
and I was going to show him what, you know, some of the stuff we did. So I played the video for these doctrinal students,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I barely have a master's degree, so
mm-hmm.
it seems a little weird me doing that. But anyway, and as this video's playing,
mm-hmm.
I see these people,
yeah.
I see this church, I start to cry.
Yeah.
I mean, I love those people. I love what I did.
Absolutely.
And all of a sudden I'm thinking, I wish I was back there right now.
Right. Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So the guys that are in this crucible,
mm-hmm.
I know what that's like. JJ knows what that's
yes,
like.
Yes.
But man, when you look back on it, and you know what, JJ? I think that's going to be all of our ministry when we get to heaven. I don't think we're going to cry over it, but I think when we get to heaven and we see all the hard work that took place, we're going to rejoice and say, God was in all of that.
He was.
None of it was wasted.
None. Absolutely none.
Hey, man, thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Check us out at churchreplanters.com and hang in there because we're going to have another episode coming up with JJ talking just about personal evangelism.
Okay.
All right?
Sounds good.
We'll see you in a minute.
All right.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.